Why would Peter lie to me? Why does a bear shit in the woods? He demanded. Because it is his nature.
Welcome to 2C1C, the Game of Thrones podcast founded in 2010 by myself, Will Lentz, Greg Atkinson, and Brett Zeiler. Now hosted by myself, Daryl Lloyd, and Kyle Vansel, with guest appearances by past hosts and more. Many thanks to GRRM and FFG for making this possible, CardGameDB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward for the Creative Commons music you hear in this episode. Welcome to Season 4.5.
That's actually from the books.
Yeah.
When is that from?
I have no idea. It was on a list of quotes from the first book.
All right, I'll take your word for it. That's interesting. I don't remember the phrase "does a bear shit in the woods" coming up in the novel, but maybe it does.
I was so excited. Let me see if I can find it. P-T-Y-R.
So, welcome, then, to another episode of Two Champs and a Chump. I'm your stalwart host, Will, joined by my slightly less stalwart but still has seniority on the show co-host.
I am your vengeful co-host, Daryl Lloyd.
I'll be vigilant, Aaron Glazer.
Konnichiwa, bitches!
And the infamous Kyle.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm also immune to events.
Really? I'm not sure you're allowed to have qualified keywords, Daryl.
Damn it. Can I just be immune?
Yeah, you can just be immune.
Thank God.
For the record, I found it. That quote is legit. It is Caitlin interrogating Tyrion if he gave the dagger to the assassin.
Ah, nice.
So, like, book two. No, book one.
Book one.
I'm reading the whole section right here. Totally fits in. Tyrion totally says, "Why does a bear shit in the woods?"
That's
guess cool. I need to reread the early books. This week, we have the chapter pack review for the latest pack, Ancestral Home. Now, we're going to go ahead and dive right into it, I think, but a couple of caveats before we do. One being, I do not have a pack in my hands yet, and it has not been updated on CardGameDB yet, so I'm going off of AGOT cards, which, you know, great resource for the community, but sometimes there are small errors in the wording of those cards. So take that with a grain of salt as we read these.
Own caveat before we start. It came up last week and I didn't actually say it first, and I should. I'm like the purest Jamie you're ever going to meet. So I'm rating these straight Jamie. I don't care if they have cool Shaga effects unless they're going to like lead to broken combos.
Dear God, you disgust me.
That's fine.
It's like Brett Zeiler all over again.
Exactly. Well, he's worse. He's like, yeah, broken combos. I'm so into the game. It's like, calm down, Brett.
Oh, yeah. That was hilarious.
Yeah. So for anybody who bizarrely has never listened to a chapter pack review of ours before, we are currently going through every card in the pack and rating them on an A through F rating system, like American grades. And much like all things American, it doesn't quite make sense because there is no E. So A is going to be an amazing auto-include. Well, okay, maybe not auto-include, but game-changing effect like, say, Mira. All the way down to the prototypical F card without his beard. So Renly Baratheon, he's a unique Baratheon character. He's 3 cost, 3 strength, and all 3 icons. He has only the Lord trait, and he has prized 1. And Marshalline, kneel a Baratheon character to lower the cost of the next character you play this phase by X, where X is the number of prized cards you control. Limit once per round. I think this seems pretty cool. This seems like a good way to push that prized thing out of Baratheon, who I think can kind of afford to absorb some of those prized losses a little better than some other houses because they dominate the power challenge so much. They're quite likely to get that power back on their own house card. But, of course, you know, it does encourage committing to it pretty heavily. So it's going to be tricky to really find where the over-committing point is on this, I think.
I think he's pretty cool. I wish he had the queen trait, but other than that, perfect. Maybe a noble crest. You yearn for the noble crest.
Yeah, noble crest would be fantastic.
Yeah, noble crest would be nice. Or, so, you know, renown. Renown would have been nice.
Well, that's the key, I think. That's our big hint to what deck he's supposed to be in. He really is meant for noble cause. I think he's meant to accelerate that deck, make you able to be able to get out a lot of cards. Because remember, you don't have to kneel a prize card. You can just kneel any Baratheon card. So
yeah,
like
any Barrett character. That's awesome.
Those stupid zero cost to Shy or Refugees are going to get you, like, negative, you know, hopefully negative 2 or 3 for the next card you play.
Or Shadows Bob, who may be able to stand back up immediately.
Oh, very cool, yeah.
Yeah. That might be nice.
Oh. I would go with more than nice for that. I mean, even with just Renly on the board, because he's 3 times per phase, not round like some of those other effects, then in the Marshalline phase, he gives you a -3 reducer. Like, well, right there.
No, Renly's limit once per round.
Ah, dang.
That's what I was about to say. I was like,
it's Renly's ability. My bad.
Damn it.
Too busy thinking about the standing. Okay.
They limited our boy.
But they have good prize cards coming out of Baratheon already.
Yeah. I like the little single icon guy.
Yeah.
He's neat, so.
And, what's it name? Heartsbane is pretty solid, too.
Yeah.
I like Heartsbane pretty well, yeah.
Yeah. The question is, would you run him over the 3-for-4 Renly?
In Noble Cause.
Yeah.
In Noble Cause, yeah.
In Noble Cause, when I'm getting the renown anyway.
Yeah, I could see that. All right, Will, what are you going to rate him, bro?
I mean, I kind of agree with Darren. It looks like he's pointed towards a fairly specific kind of deck type. So he's not going to be everywhere, but I think he does look pretty tempting for that kind of deck. So I'm feeling maybe like a B-.
If you really have your heart set on one of the other kings, the fact that he's just a lord is nice in that regard.
Yeah.
So I'll give him a B+, because I think there's some utility here. Like you said, if you get enough prize cards, if you get he is one, if you get the house attachment and Heartsbane, now you essentially have a repeatable seat of power, and that's never a bad thing.
Yeah.
So B+.
I'm just going to go ahead and give him a C. I think that the effect can be nice. You can make it super efficient by obviously kneeling like one of your worthless dudes, who doesn't really like a refugee or something like that. I think, Wicked Seductress, does she have to kneel to participate in a challenge, or is it just when she kneels, kneel a character without an intrigue icon? Do you guys remember?
When she kneels.
Okay.
She kneels, so that's actually very cool.
That could be some dope ass tech right there. So now I'm going to give him a B because I just thought of that. No, I'm just kidding.
That's pretty cool. I like it.
Wow, way to go, Daryl, with the synergy.
There you go. Sorry, I just hit my mic, if anybody heard that.
And now he's a Shy Holy fitting.
Right? I was so excited.
Mm-hmm.
Noble Cause Holy is a real thing, so that's not a bad idea at all.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and they have ways to give him the Holy Crest, so you can use them on your Power Faith turns.
Oh, yeah, there's a prize card that'll stand him if he wins a power challenge, so.
You're not wrong. Yeah.
So he's at least two even without that noble crest. That
I do like crest. That Bear is the one house especially that seems to almost try and make prized a positive keyword as opposed to a negative one. You're seeing a lot of positive things that seem to build. I mean, everyone got those attachments to their house, but it seems like Bera especially is trying to entice more prized cards in your deck. And yeah. I do like that. I think that's a cool
idea. That feels kind of fitting for them, particularly for Renly's faction of House Baratheon, I think.
So I'm going to give it a C also. It's a potentially very strong effect. But it's a potentially very strong effect for a deck that's only been a C deck so far. So this could be very good, and this could end up working out great. But for now, I think it's just a C.
All right.
D, you're up.
All right. Next, we have, I'm assuming, Lasani Captain? Is that right?
Sure.
Is that the next one? You're just like, sure, okay.
Yeah, no, it's Lysini Captain. Sorry. I had already forgotten I was going to have to read those out.
Yeah. Is that right? Yeah, sure. Okay. Anyways, all right. Lysini, or I don't know how to say it. Lysini Captain. He's 3 cost, 3 strength, military power. His military icon does have a naval enhancement. He is a smuggler and a captain with prized 1. And he reads response. After you play Lysani Captain, pay 2 gold to move all power from a character to Lysini Captain. Holy ass and tits. That is ridiculous. That is so cruel to any card. Like, I used to think that, well, I still think that Sorella is a pain in the ass. This could be a pretty fat effect. Is it Sorella that I'm thinking of?
You mean Ilaria?
Ilaria, thank you. Yeah, that's what I meant. But this is pretty fat. That, I mean, essentially you're paying 5 gold type of thing for him. But to move all power, like, that could be a fat swing. Especially in a melee game or something, like.
Oh, yeah.
Damn.
Especially with Red Queen's Faithful. Throw 3 power on a dude, and then next turn be like, that's my power.
Sure. Mm-hmm. That's a very potent effect. I would say it's pretty cost intensive, but being that Baratheon has, like, Seat of Power and things like that, like, come on.
Well, and it screws up the Viper, and anything that screws up the Viper is automatically, like, at least worth a second look.
Yeah. That is worth pointing out for people that the captain only targets the power, so much like Ilaria Sand, it can take that power off of the Viper, even though he's immune to character abilities.
Yeah, so I guess this is just another sort of way that FFG is kind of sticking it to the uber character decks, which is fine. I mean, I get it. But that's a really fat effect, and somebody's going to get pissed when, like, 4 power comes off of their Stannis, you know, their immune to location Stannis or something, and you just take it. So, interesting.
He's going to be bananas in the melee game.
Yeah. Oh, Bera is just getting crazy in melee between this and Mel's favor. Oh, wow.
I was thinking, isn't there some Lannister attachment where you have to put the power on a character?
Why, yes, there is.
Yes, head of a dwarf. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fucked up.
Do that. Like, I have this deck idea that is slowly coming together but is nowhere near good enough yet, that's Bera and Lani conquesting in some order, and you just steal everything.
Nice.
And that's the whole deck, and Citizen Slave and Mel's Favor. And this would slot in great.
That has to be a Bera deck, because Mel's Favor is Bera only.
Yeah. Boom. Yeah. So there you go. Let's solve that issue.
I mean, that could potentially own melee, but might even be playable in Joust as some kind of janky combo.
Can you imagine Head of the Dwarf on any, like, uber character, and then just, I'm going to steal him.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Or, in this case, steal all his power off him, which is the same thing.
All right. Well, I guess I have to read it first, huh? Jeez. Yeah, oh, man, that's really good. It's really good. I mean, situational. kind of, sort of, damn it, I don't know. I really don't know what to give this card. Like, that effect could be so big. But I remember us seeing... Trash. Huh?
It's an or it can be trash.
Right, and it's a one-off. Right. So, and it's right. a one-off response, so one Iron Throne and you're just sad.
Right. And I yeah, or, you know, he calls it thinking can really wreck you. But, like...
And early game when there's no power on dudes.
Right. And, like, I remember when we first saw Solidor Saan, you know, that Solidor Saan after you play a smuggler, you know, he's been decent. He's definitely kicked my ass in a few games, but, you know, not necessarily, sort of a similar effect. I'm just going to go ahead, I'll give it a C to be conservative.
I mean, I think it's worth looking at. He still has a pretty solid body. That relevant smuggler trait, like you mentioned, I'm trying to remember. The captain actually got a couple cards that refer to it, right?
Yeah, he's got that one strength one, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. The location.
Oh, and a renown one.
Oh, nice! I forgot about that. There we go.
Huntress.
Yeah. I mean, and he's got that naval enhancement.
So black
and,
sails.
Yeah, exactly. Black sails out of bear is totally a thing. So I think he's got a home with a couple of copies. You're not locked into paying that 5 gold, you know, to get that effect. Even in just the 3 gold body with the other stuff, there's decks where I'm okay with having a couple copies. So in the end, yeah, it's so hard to judge that ability, but off of everything else, I feel okay giving him like a C+.
I felt I was high on him. I started at an A-, and the more I've thought about him, the more disadvantages I'm finding. Especially at Abera, where especially right now it seems like a very strong initial presence is key. Like you said, he's great in black sails, and he's good in a singleton. Will probably make most decks. So I can't forget that. But I just hate the thought of a card, and I've been talking with John Bruno a lot, and he has just been shitting on cards that you don't want in that opening hand going in the first turn. And this is probably going to be one of those. And so with that, I've talked myself off the A down to a B-. But, I mean, he will win you games. And effects that are that game-changing are awesome, but like Daryl says, we've seen a huge trend towards just, ever since Nate kind of took back over the reins, just shat on uber characters. And with so much deterrent, the odds of you coming across something with 3 or 4 power on it is unlikely. And it's hard to rationalize spending 2 gold, steal a power, maybe 2. So, I don't know. Oh yeah, I'll still get my B-, but this card is definitely one that could boom or bust.
I'm very much in C+. I don't think I'd ever play him outside of Barra Black Sails, but Barra Black Sails is good enough, and you can choose him at the optimal time, given the agenda, that I still think he's very valid for that deck, if not necessarily elsewhere.
Sounds good. Kyle, I think you have Warden of the South.
Warden of the South. The Southern Warden. Out of Barra. Alright, yes. Here we go. We have a unique zero-cost attachment. It's a title. For all the title synergy out there. Prized 2 only goes on a house card. Response. After you play a prized card, kneel attached house card to choose an opponent. That opponent must choose and reveal a new plot card. There was a time where this ability would be so good, and that time may come back again. But right now, this is such a... This card is could be really good, but it's a meta play. If there are currently things that you're worried about, if Burn's real hot, you want to flip them off their threat turn, or if Burning Bridges or Attack from the Sea really hurt you and you're seeing a lot of it...
Burning Bridges isn't going to work.
Oh, yeah. Damn.
I thought you were going to say the optimal time that may come back around is when Sandy's doing shots for plots and you're playing against him.
Well, there's that. That would be the most optimal time.
Sandy only plays rivers now, so you're just giving him more cards.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, with river plots and city plots, like, do you want that to happen? I mean, like,
you do not want to accept
I'll tell you what, man. I mean, Greg lived the dream when he made me flip in into my own Valor. You know, and that's living the dream. But currently,
he runs that card to flip his own plots. That it hit you that time was like coincidental.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you're not wrong. It'll be interesting. I mean, how many, I don't know what I want to say, passive plots are people running these days? I mean, you see a little bit of Fear Winter, little bit of,
Not too much. That's why Seductive,
dry season?
Art of Seduction's been so big.
Right. So.
You should be seeing more Fear Winter. You really should. If you're not.
I wish. I keep running Fear Winter, but I'm going against Old Way decks.
Yeah. I mean, you raise the right point, Daryl, is that, like I was trying to say, it's a meta play. If when those plots are big and they particularly dick over what you're trying to do, that is the time to run it. But right now, where, I mean, rivers are so prevalent, and until that gets changed, you can't play this card.
It's
not worth a slot.
Even, like, there's a Marjorie that does this. How often do you see her?
Not often, but I think you're probably still more likely to see her than Warden.
Yeah. So, the card is shit.
It's zero cost, goes on your house.
Yeah, but it's also prized, too, and that there's so many unique attachments out there right now that are all coming out at once that, like, attachment hate's going to be reasonably common. And the effect isn't great, so, like, you're risking all that, you're doing all that, and it's not set up for the one in a million chance that you grab it exactly when they have that plot you don't like?
Like I said, right now it is not the play, but it's something to keep in mind for the day when, like I said, if Burn comes back to the top and becomes, because Burn seems to come in spurts, like it seems like it dominates the meta, and then it recedes, and then dominates the meta, and if you're going to something where you know that it's just going to be everywhere, having it to stop a threat turn can save you a game.
Sure.
Now, again,
you can also win them the game when they're like, oh, by the way, negative one strength to somebody, I'm going to kneel this location and I'll take two power.
Well,
or I'll kneel Viserys.
We will see. But,
so
yeah.
What rating would you actually give it then?
It's real utility. It's when there's a deck type out there that just wrecks your day and you can't seem to get over the hump and it's real popular. But if that's not the case, there's no reason to run it.
Yeah. All right, so what would you rate it, Kyle?
D. Just a D.
Yeah, I'm going to second that. It is a D card as of the moment.
Actually, I'm gonna triple that. I don't know what I should say. As far as what number I should be, but a D feels right.
Yeah, I'm failing it. There's no reason in hell for me to play this. Like, if I'm playing this, I need to just play a better deck.
Wow.
Mm. And you're the guy going against Burn all the time. You don't like the option to get him out of their threat turn?
I'd run the Marjorie first.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't blame you there.
Okay.
It's a weird thought.
All right.
Or
yeah, I know. We can talk about the card all day. Let's just move on. I know. There's a lot to talk about with a card like this. Let's just move on.
So, what am
Fair
I
reading? Enough. It looks like Aaron's up with Great Wick.
Oh, Jesus Christ. God. Okay, good card. Great Wick. Location, Greyjoy, unique. Two cost. Iron Islands trait. Thank God it's not a warship. It is, any phase, kneel Greatwick to choose another location. Kneel or stand at that location. And holy fuck, is that broken.
That is
so good.
I can't believe, of like all the locations that have been printed so far with like prized on them, how is this not prized?
Right.
Like, this is absurd.
This might be the best location in the game.
You are not wrong.
You know what's crazy?
It's
when we first
saw it
fanned out on the FFG site, we could tell, like, even though we couldn't see the whole thing, we could tell it said stand at location.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, oh my goodness, this is going to be amazing. And then it comes out, and it's even better because it gives you that that control option if you need it
right.
to kneel a different one.
That is
holy cow,
crazy good. And it's any phase even, like, come on. Like,
so let's go over some quick awesome ways to use it. What you got?
There's a million ways.
I mean, Choke loves it.
Hell yeah, Choke loves it. Choke loves it. Anything Greyjoy loves it right now.
Kneeling opponents.
I mean, this card single-handedly.
Lannister loves it. Why wouldn't Lannister run it? Targ loves it.
Targ runs it. Double Scourge.
Aegon's Hill. Double Aegon's Hill sounds awesome.
Double draw Meraxes.
Hell yeah. Double draw with the Mander if I need to at a Lannister.
Double up on Harrenhal.
Double Maiden's Bane.
Iron Throne.
Throne.
That'd probably be the most brutal.
Even in Martell with the Scourge off the restricted list now.
Holy shit.
Or just stop your opponents any of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, that's... Yeah. Come on.
You can neuter Rinkus's Hill. Everyone forgets you have to kneel and discard that.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, definitely. Is that the same with the Iron Mines? Do you have to kneel and discard that?
Yes, you do.
Yes. Yeah. So... I don't blame FFG for having a hard-on for Greyjoy right now. Everybody's always enjoyed Greyjoy, except for me. I'm so annoyed by saves. Dang it! They're so lucky. No, but seriously, this card is excellent. Absolutely excellent.
I think you're going to see a lot more conquest to Greyjoy just so houses have access to...
Dude, I'd pay 4 gold for this shit. Maybe I'm the only one.
Yeah, no, you're not.
No, not even. In Lanny, I probably would for sure, and some white houses may.
There's good decks playing the Iron Throne at a house for 4 gold. Mm-hmm. I'll play this instead. This will shut down Iron Throne and give me other things.
Yeah, so tell me this. Riddle me this. Is this card worth running Bloody Keeps in Greyjoy? Just one. One Bloody Keep now.
I might run one
and get a guy, you know, 4-cost guy or whatever for free.
If I'm not running a really location centric and heavy build like Old Way, if I'm doing something more character centric like Unopposed or heck, maybe even Maesters or something, then yeah, I might run one.
Nah, you know what you want from this? If you're doing that, you want the 2-draw from Double Longship Iron Victory.
Challenge, because
you can do that on one challenge.
Would that work?
Yep.
Yeah, but would you still get to draw 2 cards?
Yep, it's a lasting effect.
Really?
Well, you'd draw one, you'd cap yourself, but yeah.
But eventually, you draw 2. You get the +2 strength twice, and the lasting effect takes effect twice.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you get 2 cards.
Yeah. This is, again, another card on the opposite end of the spectrum where we can sit here and talk about it all day. Let's all just give it an S.
You could also House of Dreams this and just make all your locations.
Oh my god. Uh-huh. Living the fucking dream. I like this card. I like it and I don't like it.
So I'll rate A+.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm giving it an S. It is the highest rating I've ever given a card. This card is. I mean, granted, its only drawback is that it needs other locations to actually work, but still really good. And that
does very little by itself.
Correct. That is an honest drawback, actually. But I mean, come on, certainly. Who puts this in their deck with nothing to use it with?
There's actually another drawback. It's a little bit like if I'm playing Lanny and Kyle's playing Lanny, and we both drop the Iron Throne. The pair of them sit there and do nothing. Similar thing, if I have Great Wick and Daryl drops Great Wick, then most of the time, the smart play is going to be for each of us to use Great Wick to negate the other person's Great Wick.
There's an opportunity cost involved. Like, against Lands, you might have a dupe on somebody, and then your Great Wick, if your first player is going to want to get rid of their Iron Throne, but they might want to instead of just standing there Iron Throne, they want to get W set up in Toshi, stuff like that. There's a lot of decision making there.
It's not 100%, but I think a lot of times that'll probably still be a strong move.
Yeah.
But it's still amazing. It's definitely an A card.
It's hilarious that this card exists, and so does 10 Towers.
I know, right? In the same house.
Like, come on, bro.
Oh, boy. No, it is good. Like I said, there are tiny concerns. Nothing to stop you from running it. The things that stop you from saying it's the best card in the game or perfect. I'll give it an A. I won't give it the plus, but I'll give it the A.
Yeah. I mean, it's understandable. I love the hype train. You know me, but I just can't get over it. That's crazy good. Anyways, who's next? Will, it's back around to you.
Yep, it's back to me with King of the Isles. This one is a Greyjoy attachment. It's unique. It's a title. It's prized 3. Yeah, attached to your house card. Response after you play a prized card. Kneel King of the Isles. Then until the end of the round, King of the Isles gains. Response. Kneel attached house card to cancel a triggered effect. Prize 3 is pretty huge. But that having that cancel available for the entire rest of the round is also pretty huge. And of course, Greyjoy's got Wex Pike to help them keep bringing some of this prize stuff back and reusing it, which means I could see you maybe being able to play a prize card most turns. And now, granted, Greyjoy doesn't have as many prize cards, it seems, as some others, but some of the ones they have look awfully tempting, like the Reaver. So I kind of like this one, even at prize 3.
I don't know. Like, Greyjoy has a lot of cancel, and now there's neutral cancel. So it's not a bad card, but it's still a attachment that's prize 3.
That is scary. I mean, I think this is one of the most effective uses we've seen of prize truly scaring you off and balancing a card.
Yeah.
A lot of times you kind of shrug it. But this, I think it's a real, people stop and go, whoa, whoa. Free power for an attachment that all we have to do is kneel a dude out of Targ and it's gone.
Yeah. You know, and another thought that I didn't quite think of when I was first thinking of that, those Greyjoy prize cards that are likely to see play, like the Reavers, and I've even been seeing the new LIV some, all have that awesome effect by discarding themselves, which immediately gives that power to your opponent. So, you know, Greyjoy likes to be handing that prize power to the opponent, which makes this prize 3 look scarier.
Yeah. So normally I would say it's still okay to run this card, but obviously FFG is trying to shift the meta back into putting attachment control in your deck. The thing you have to think about that in a meta where there's obviously going to be tech for attachment control is, do you want to run this card and most of the time have to kneel your house card and use its effect to save itself from being discarded? You know what I mean? And giving your opponent 3 power? So I don't know. Canceling a triggered effect is a very, very powerful ability. So I think it's rightfully at prize 3. I just don't know if I would run it yet.
That's huge. But, I mean, I think even if you are blowing it to save itself, I think that's huge because now they're wasting their effects on... The only time it's going to become a stalemate is if they have a Viz out and you can't keep funneling prize onto the board. But outside of him, I mean, you can theoretically protect it from whatever happens to come its way.
The lost message.
Fair enough.
Which is actually...
But who's... Outside of seasons, no one's going to run that.
Quite a few people have been running it lately.
I've even thought about running it.
It's in a lot of the old way right now because the old way is so scared of Stark's attachments.
Yeah.
That is true.
The old way is everywhere.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, especially with Wick. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you were running mass location control before, something needs to be in your deck now.
Or you just run Greyjoy and then you can deal with those locations.
Oh. Greyjoy got you down? Just out Greyjoy or Greyjoy?
Just play Greyjoy, bro. Anyways.
Yo, bro. I heard you like Greyjoy.
Do you even Greyjoy, bro? Okay. Who read this card?
I did.
Okay, what would you rate it?
it's tough. It's another attachment. And I still am kind of meh on most attachments. And prize 3 is so much. I want to like that powerful ability, but I think it's probably still just like a D+ card.
Damn.
Well,
yeah.
I'm going to have to second that just because, like, Greyjoy already has ways to cancel triggered effects. I get that kneeling your house card is a super easy cost, but with an attachment that's prize 3, it's so risky, man. I don't think I could do it. So I'm going to give it a D.
I'll give it a B- because it's better than both of you think it is.
I'm actually at a C-. The D card to me is a card where, like, if I see you playing it, I think you're kind of a bad player. And I don't think you're bad if you play King of the House. I just think you didn't optimize entirely. So, C-.
Okay. Daryl, I think you're up with Set Sail.
Set Sail. All right, so we're sticking with Greyjoy. It is an event. Obviously, House Greyjoy only. After you win an unopposed challenge, search your deck for a warship location, reveal it, and add it to your hand. Then shuffle your deck. That's okay. It's gonna find your warships. Sure is.
Yep. And then it's going to shuffle your deck.
I believe it will also... Yeah. Yes, then shuffle... Yes, it does that.
So why the hell would you really play this? Run some draw, run an extra copy. Like, it's not card advantage. It can be canceled to be card disadvantage. It's just kind of there. Like, why?
Maybe you want to get more warships out to pump your Maiden's Bane or something. Maybe you've always wanted to try Winter Armada run one in your deck.
Yeah, then don't try it. Like, commit or shit or get off the pot.
Riders of Red Fork out of house.
Hey, there we go. Thank you, finally. That's an optimal play if I've ever heard one.
Totally.
Welcome to the best card in the game. Now you can search for it another way. Like, awesome.
And you still get to pay 5 for it.
That's right. Obviously, I think that everybody's wishing that it would just put that into play, but that would be a really ridiculous...
Prize 2, at least.
Maybe that's a missed opportunity there as a prized event. You do already have to win an unopposed challenge, which it's kind of nice that they are reminding players that that is still an archetype of Greyjoy, is to win unopposed challenges and start rocking and rolling with Rise of the Kraken and whatnot. But I just don't know. Of all the events that Greyjoy can run, tough to put this in there. I think even in a worship-heavy... deck.
Yeah, I'm thinking it may be more for a warship light deck that wants to sneak something through and then go search up a particular warship.
And then you draw your warship and then you see that event and you cry.
It's possible. I mean, you know, there's a balance that needs to be found there.
Uh-huh. The balance is play good cards.
I would run one of. If you're running a bunch of the different long ships with different effects. I mean, they're kind of toolboxy, so to be able to go get the right one is kind of nice.
Yeah,
right.
That's what I was thinking. It gives them that ability to search up specific ones, and as warships continue to come out, you know, that have specific functions, I could see slotting this to grab it and get a little bit of that kind of black sails versatility.
Run a bunch of them, probably one of. If you were building Dark Wings, Dark Words,
That's not a terrible idea. Dark Wings, Dark Words is a decent card.
Yeah, if you're going to go with that agenda, it's a nice one-of, because now it is card advantage on top of getting a warship.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that later.
Yep. I guess if I had to rate it, I'm just going to go ahead and give it a C. Search is still a good effect as a whole. I'm just not sure that this is going to be crazy good.
Unopposed challenges seem to be very common in my games, especially early on. A lot of chump challenges go through on both sides of the board. That's a whole other discussion on why I think that is. But I think a one-of would be nice. I'll give it a B minus C plus, somewhere in there. I think search is, Greater does not have a lot of it. So, if you need it, you can go get it, which is nice.
I'm going to go with a D, just for the Dark Wings, Dark Words. I don't think it's actually playable anywhere but there.
Oh. Man. Maybe I like this one about the most.
I'm going to start building decks with cards that Aaron hates.
Please do.
Do it, and we'll stream it on Twitch. We'll let everyone watch. A feast for eating crows.
I don't even hate it, but what are you cutting for this, like, one of this? You're going to cut a much, much better card.
You don't know that. What if I'm running another card and suck?
Oh, man. But, like, you're cutting some Greyjoy Cancel for that. You're cutting a Nightmares for that. No thanks. I'll take Nightmares over this 10 times out of 10, and Greyjoy very rarely has space for Nightmares itself.
Man, I don't know. I kind of dig it. Search is something that Greyjoy doesn't get, so I have to acknowledge that there's some potential there for sure. And I'm liking the thought of running, you know, an unopposed deck and tinkering with that again, and being able to push through something unopposed and go get another scouting vessel so I can continue that beat down or something. So I don't know. I'm probably the most positive on it. I'm giving it like a C+. I don't know.
That's totally what I gave it. You can't say you're the most positive.
But I feel like I'm considering it more positively than you are.
Asshole.
Just paper shield it and move on.
All right.
Yeah, because that's totally the bars if something can get paper shielded.
No, I will totally never paper shield that. If you use that, I'm going to be like, okay, have your worship. Let's move on with life.
All right, so what's next?
I don't know.
All right, looks like Tyrion Lannister is up next.
All right. Throw it at us, Kyle.
Oh, I'm up. Sweet.
Yep.
What may be the ugliest Tyrion outside of I'm You Writ Small to date. New Tyrion is 4 cost, 3 strength. Intrigue, power, learned, lord, prized 2 and stealth. And the meat and potatoes is, if you win a challenge in which Tyrion Lannister attacked alone, instead of the normal claim effects, reveal a card from the losing opponent's hand at random. You may put that card into play under your control if able, otherwise discard it.
Shit all over my balls.
Yeah.
It's kind of amazing how much better that is than Hugor Hill. And Hugor just came out like last year, right?
A little bit ago. This is just so amazing. When you think about a lot of these effects people get nervous about with these attacking alone, but you see Pyat Priest still works all the time. I've had a lot of success with Hugor. I mean, play him, drop in I'm Urit Small. Now he's 5 strength and deadly with the stealth, so you're killing the dude they're defending with. I mean, give Tyrion his crossbow and he's unstoppable.
Yeah,
this card
absolutely
is great.
Yeah, he's super good. Another card that I think would help you push some of those challenges through that I've been thinking of running more, I haven't, is The Only Game That Matters. You know, I think that that's going to catch some people off guard too, and that's going to help you attack them alone as well.
So you're thinking like on power challenges then?
Definitely thinking on power challenges.
Daryl is money this episode.
I'm money all the time, son. Anyways, no, but I enjoy claim replacement, especially early on, if there's or maybe late game while you're doing the beatdown and your opponent has no power on his house. This is a great opportunity for you. Prize two, you know, that sucks, but it's to balance the effect. The effect is really good. I really like Huger Hill, but I've never really been able to get him to work consistently. So this is a really good
choice.
Can
you imagine this early, like let's say you're running Power Behind the Throne and you drop like a Game of Thrones or Schemes of the Scholar and you can use him three times.
Oh.
Like early game, just an insane setback. I mean, you get around limited, you get around everything.
Do you get around fear? I don't.
Yeah, because it's from your hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. That's pretty sick. Opening turn, Power Behind the Throne, Fear of Winter with Tyrion. I mean, it kind of.
Well,
you're getting less total cards since you
want
to get
the two. Well, you can just make it a power challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Pretty brutal. I mean, he is 4 cost.
Sure. Which is a pro next cycle.
Yeah, it's huge pro next cycle. Don't get me started. Yeah.
I just like this is one of the first cards that has prized on it that I legitimately feel should be prized. Not only is it an amazing ability, but this is one of the named, like, notable characters from the books. Like, yes, Tyrion is prized, not, you know, some dinky, you know, bargeman that evidently is following House Targ.
He's prized.
Ron Coleman is a noble man.
Is this the best Tyrion?
Man, Shadows Tyrion is still real good.
So. Yeah, if you're running Shadows-centric, I would still maybe run that one, but otherwise, this one by far
really
over
good.
The others.
Peter Dinklage ruined Tyrion Lannister for me. Like, this guy is so ugly. Peter Dinklage is, I mean, that's not a bad-looking guy, you know? Come on.
Dinklage has a noble visage, you may say.
Yeah, he's a good-looking guy. Go ahead and you throw the first rating out, Kyle.
I'm like, can I give this an A yet?
Yes.
I love him, my bro.
Definitely.
Yeah, he's an A.
I'm also going to... Oh, no, go ahead. You got more to say about that?
I mean, just kind of like what Will said, when he came out, I went to the Fear of Winter. Just the early game impact. I mean, you want that one card you play on that turn to be huge, and he does that in a big way. So,
yeah. This is definitely a good card that I think especially control players would enjoy. You know, you keep their guys down. And much like Pyat Pri, how Pyat Pri works, you know, he's got a lot of support through the events from Targaryen that help him win those challenges by himself and murder guys. So the same idea here. You support him with the tools that you have and throw him in there. And then he's just going to put crap into plan of your control. I mean, if you get an event, well, that sucks. But you still
discard it.
You still discard a card, right. So you don't lose. So even if you want to intrigue with him, you're not really losing out, but I would recommend if you could win that power challenge. He does have stealth, and that's a pretty big deal, so I've heard. So I will also give him an A. I like it. I think even at prize two, he is worth running.
I mean, how many 4-strength intrigue icons are you going to have out there that you're willing to throw in just to defend this? I mean, you're going to have to defend it, so this is going to wreck your shit, but...
How many 4-strength intrigue icon characters are there? Not a ton.
So you have to.
That can't be stealth. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, because you got to have two out. Because if you got just one, he's just going to stealth him.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
And that's barring,
getting quite a few pumps lately. So.
Definitely. And this could be really dope if you play. Oh my gosh, I forgot the name of it. There are no men like me, so you can get double use out of him possibly.
Yeah,
so.
Or like Desolate Passage. I mean, now I hate dedicating a plot slot to one scenario, but...
That's a pretty dope scenario, though, so...
That is very dope.
All right.
Quick question. What happens if you're attacking with Tyrion and your opponent plays Red Vengeance?
Claim replacement.
Nothing. Same exact thing as if you Red Vengeance Pyat Pri. The claim replacement still goes off.
Yeah.
Doesn't change anything.
Bummer.
Put your own thing into play.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I was like, that still wouldn't be bad.
I think it's a B. My big concern isn't the prize or anything else. It's that 4 for 3, like 4 for 4, and he's an A++++. But 4 for 3 is always going to just be a giant target for stealth, and that's so expensive that when you're painting that 4 for 3 and you just get burned to nothing, like, you're in a much weaker position than you would otherwise be.
I mean, burn always sucks, but if any house is going to be able to toss money at it, it's Lannister.
I don't think that's true. Lannister doesn't have better gold than other houses.
Really? I'm not sure you're playing Lannister.
What are you smoking? Who
Lannister
you buy that
has
from?
Lannister has the gold meanies. There's nothing else they do that has so much better gold than everybody.
Coin mints?
Coin
mints are iffy. I do really
have great cards.
Whoa, stop eating your mic. Lannisport Treasury? I still like Lannisport Treasury.
Agreed.
Lannisport Treasury is eh.
I know what you mean. It's the same idea as a
reducer.
Right. I completely understand that.
It's universe. It's way better than a reducer.
All right.
Gold always actually.
I know.
It's better than a reducer, but not way better. Okay. The reducer you get the initial use out of. It's comparable, and you almost never see it. Like, in all the Lannister decks that have been good for the past 2 years or so,
right,
there have been no Lannisport Treasuries. Lannister's been running
a little heavier
on gold. Yeah. And their best plots are all three gold.
Maybe they need to go back to that and run more gold.
They're fine.
They're terrible against burn. So? Well, again.
I know. Okay. All right. We can talk about this all day. Will, give it a rating. For God's sakes, let's move on.
Did I not give it one earlier?
No.
My bad. I'm feeling like an A- for this Tyrion.
Okay. All right. Well,
okay. The Westerlands is next, but I don't remember whose turn it is to
read.
Is it Aaron's?
It's me.
Yep.
So, the Westerlands, location, unique, one cost. I'm just getting all the awesome cards.
Yeah, what is up with that?
It is prized one, and it damn well better be. Westerlands trait, response. After an opponent's character is knelt by one of your card effects, choose a kneel location. Limit 3 times per phase.
Crap.
Holy sh... I don't even know what to say.
I know why they printed it, I think. Lannister was always the Greyjoy predator. Like, they're what kept Greyjoy in check, the way Tar keeps them in check. And the old way was eating Lannister, because they couldn't get through all that shit. But that's not a problem anymore.
Ugh. That's just...
not at all.
Gnarly, man.
I mean, between this and Harry the Riverlands, I mean, Harry the Riverlands already helps Lannister keep Greyjoy down because they've got all that low-cost, high-strength stuff. But the Westerlands on top of that means Lanny's going to kneel a ton of Greyjoy's board.
Man. Yeah. Of course
and,
this is going to come
worth
out.
Noting.
And it doesn't kneel to trigger.
Right.
It just happens.
Well, and speaking of the triggers... it's worth noting what it triggers off of, which is after the character is knelt, not after the effect is triggered that would do the kneeling. So it's different from something like the Queen's Guard, who looks for the effect. So if I play to Harry the Riverlands and knelt 3 refugees, the Queen's Guard only goes off once. The Westerlands, though, would go off 3 times.
Mm.
How?
Damn. And I was just
City of Sin.
Yeah.
Maybe yeah, Drunken Allegations? Oh. No, I'm just kidding.
I hate that card, but yeah.
I was just thinking the other day about running Tyrion's Chain again. That's how desperate I was to kneel locations. And now I don't have to do that.
Well, no, you can, because if you kneel one thing in Tyrion's Chain, you just knelt their entire location base.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, not quite. Westerlands says it has to be an opponent's character.
Well, no. You kneel one of their characters. Right. Westerlands kneels that one location that has the chain.
Right.
And then you've set off a chain reaction, and all their locations are gone.
As long as they don't win a military challenge against me, it'll be okay. But you're right. That could be fat, okay. So it'll be okay. Just don't lose a military challenge at a Lannister. It'll be fine.
This would be cool in some kind of Lainey Greyjoy choke deck.
Yeah.
And, oh, dude. Lannister winter coming back?
Maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know.
It's at least worth a look.
So, this is really good. Let's, Aaron, go ahead and rate it, buddy.
A. It's fantastic. It goes in every Lannister deck, at least a one of, usually a two of.
Yep, I'll give it an A. Location control is hard out of that house, and I'm tired of running Condemned by the Councils and eating up event slots.
It's just foolish right now not to give it an A, I think, in a meta right now where you have to control locations.
Yeah, Maiden Spain is what we're talking about, by the
way.
Yeah.
Definitely Maiden
Spain. Not necessarily.
No,
or Tell Knights the Hollow Hill, maybe not such a problem, but...
Maiden Spain is the big one.
Yeah, as long as they're not dreaming that motherfucker.
Yeah.
Well, which normally they're old weighing it anyway, so...
Yeah.
They should be old weighing it. Yeah. I cannot... Don't understand.
So
yeah, Lannister's a house like whose weakness has been locations for ages, and that's pushed me into playing Alchemist's Guildhall lately, because it's one of the very rare Lanny effects that can try and deal with some of that stuff, and now to have the Westerlands dumped in my lap, this is like Christmas morning, and someone just handed me a Generation 1 Optimus Prime. This is fantastic.
Wow.
I'm giving it an A+.
That couldn't have been geekier.
You think this...
Laid.
So, man, it's a little early to call it, but I just feel like this had as errata to once per round written all over it, but maybe I'm wrong.
I think it's six round.
Alright.
Well, it's at three a phase. If Bob can stand three times, I should be able to kneel things three times.
That is great logic. Okay.
Bob can do it, you can too.
Damn right. All right. Will, all right, back
I think
to you,
it's
bud.
Back to me, yep.
Yes, sir. We're
Dorne Loyalist.
Wait, what? Warden of the West? No?
Oh. Yeah, I must have accidentally moved that out of order.
You wanted one of the cool cards, didn't you?
Yeah. Warden of the West. Yeah, I did want a cool one.
Yeah.
Instead, I get another attachment. All right, Warden of the West. It's a Lannister attachment. Unique, of course. It's two cost. It's a title, prized three, and attached to your house card. Response, after you play a prized card, kneel attached house card to choose and kneel a character. Discard all power on that character.
Mm.
Yeah. I'm kind of iffy on it. I kind of dig the art and that Sphinx-looking lion in it. But prize three for cost two, unique attachment. Lannister's not really getting a bunch of prized support like, say, Baratheon is, where you really want to be playing the prized. There are prized cards that you want to play, yes. But not the same kind of support. What were you going to say, Aaron?
You've got you guys loved Counterplot. Don't sell out Counterplot already.
Whoa, no. That's what I was saying. It is a prized card, but there's not, like, more prized support in Lannister. Like, Baratheon got Renly that triggers off of the prized stuff. Or even Hex Stark got Ice that wants you to have more prized stuff. Like, Lannister's prized stuff so far is just, like, fire and forget. Counterplot, or we saw Wheels Within Wheels in the spread before and stuff. So that kind of makes me less enthused about putting a bunch of prized in a deck. Plus, they're high prized counts. Counterplot's three... Wheels, I think we saw, was two. Warden of the West is three. Like, Lanny's not really sitting there with much at the prized one slot, aside from, what, Pod?
Yeah.
Who is a unique, so you're not playing multiples.
Tyrion's
two. Tyrion.
Yeah, Tyrion's two.
We're still not quite at the end of the cycle, so.
I think a one-off isn't bad, just because I'm probably running at least one copy of Counterplot, and Wheels, when it comes out, is probably making a lot of decks for me.
Oh, yeah.
But just to be able to, even if you just play them, hold it in your hand until they drop a Viper and it gets kind of nasty on you. There are times where I think a one of will make a deck. Certainly in Melee, I think a one of will make a deck.
Ooh.
it's a potent effect. you had some way of playing prize stuff over and over again, like bouncing your hand or whatnot. I don't know how the hell you do that on Lannister. But I guess you don't even have to. It is not Lanny only. But, I mean, just for hitting the Viper, it becomes a very intriguing option.
So, do we think other houses are getting, like, Martell got the Intrigue icon, single monocon you can't defend if you have more than one icon? Do we think that every house is getting one?
Yeah, there's one in this pack.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
There should be a Targaryen
one. If Lannister gets the Intrigue one, then... I mean, I don't know. It adds some playability, right?
Yeah, that makes this look tastier if they get a prized one non-unique character. That's what I would really be looking for to be playing Warden of the West. If they had two prized one non-uniques, I think Warden of the West would possibly have a home.
It's a solid one of. It's just... If it were prize two, I'd run one in every deck. But at prize three, it just becomes so much iffier.
Well, whereas the the Greyjoy one was not as proactive. You know, you have to wait for your opponent to do something. This is moving you in a direction that you already want to go, which is a kneeling effect. So I think so far out of all of the wardens that we've seen, this one is probably the best. Kneeling. Yeah. Oh, there's three out right now.
There's three more we're covering in a few minutes, I think.
Right. Oh, okay, okay. Well, out of the ones I've seen so far, definitely think it's the best. I would consider running it. Again, prize three, yeah, that's rough. But it just depends on the meta. If everybody here in 6 months or whatever is running attachment control, then why would you do that? But if they're not, well, now you've got a free kneel when you're just playing some of your prized cards. So, a new location was prized. So,
yeah, if you're running something that's a little slower or something where you're going to time a lot, or you constantly find yourself in a situation where if I could have held them off for one more round, I could have flipped it. This is a nice one of to stick in there. I mean, Lanny has tons of draw for you to catch it and just let it sit. You're strong on intrigue, so protecting your hand is never really an issue. And just hold back until that desperate moment where you need to just slow them down, or like I said, a Viper gets ridiculous, or for some reason Brotherhood comes back. There are certainly times where I think a one of could be really solid for you.
So
yeah,
rating.
I don't know. Yeah, rating wise, I'm just not really.
You're
gonna
give it a D
because
it's an attachment.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a D plus with the nod that I do think if Lanny gets a couple non-unique prize one guys, that I think my evaluation award in the West goes up quite a bit. But just a D plus for now.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and give it a C. It does discard all power on that character, which could be really, really fat and really infuriating. Infuriating? That's not a word. Infuriating to your opponent. So, I'm going to give it a C. I think it's the most playable. I'm not sure if I would play it yet.
I'll give it a B minus.
And I'm going to go C minus. I don't think it sees much play, but it can occasionally be useful.
All right. I think Daryl is up then with the card I tried to read.
Oh, yeah. All right. Dorne Loyalist. We're now into Martell. He is 3 cost, 3 strength, military intrigue with the ally trait, prized 2, and stealth. And he reads, response. Kneel a prized character to cancel the effects of a character ability. Just triggered. I don't know. Canceling a character ability can be really, really good. At the cost of a 3-cost ally with prize 2. But he does have stealth. What a balancing act for a character like this. I don't know. I don't know if it's worth it in a house that... already cancels the responses they don't like plenty and often enough.
Martell actually has good cards, so You know, yeah. Three cost slot isn't empty of, like, you're playing him over Ilaria, or you're playing him over over Quentin that gains you power.
Over a Dagos Manwoody.
Well, that's if you're playing Gaston, I certainly wouldn't play him over Dagos.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. The Dorne Loyalist here appears to be an attempt to revisit a broken CCG era card, the Prince's Loyalist, and kind of depower it. And I don't know. I'm worried they may have gone too far.
Well, can you tell us what the Prince's Loyalist was for those of us who aren't 300 years old?
Oh my goodness, the Prince's Loyalist was absurd. Okay,
I just turned 24 yesterday, and I know what the goddamn Prince's Loyalist is.
Oh, me too, but I have to fuck with Will.
Oh, okay. Well, I will explain it anyway, because there may be a couple people in Zimbabwe listening to the podcast who've not heard us mention it before. He was 3/4, same icons, ally, stealth, and had doomed, which was the CCG equivalent of prized. And what that was if you ever had 5 or more doomed cards in your dead pile, you just straight up lost the game. And then his ability was a response that said,
wasn't
Neil
he immune
him.
To events?
Oh, I believe you're right. Sorry, he was also immune to events. And then his ability was response, Neil 1 influence, to cancel a character ability with, I believe it was influence cost X or lower, right? And where that X was the number of doomed cards in your dead pile. But the way things were ruled at the time, any character ability that had no influence cost at all could be canceled by him, even if you had no doomed cards at all. So he basically could never be removed with character abilities, because you just Neil 1 influence to cancel it. He was immune to events, so he couldn't be dissensioned away. He just rocked face. And he was amazing in challenges, too, at 3/4 with stealth.
And he didn't kneel for his own effect.
Damn. Right. That is some shit.
Silliness.
This guy is piss poor, comparatively.
Right. Now, this one, you still don't
Thank
have to
God.
Kneel him for his effect.
Yes. But kneel a prized character.
Right. So you could kneel somebody else, but what... Yeah, what are you going to be kneeling in Martell to cancel that's not him?
The Dorne guy that comes back.
Maybe, yeah. I'm a little wary of playing this Dorne Loyalist with that Dorne guy. I really like him, but he keeps when he keeps coming back, he does generate a good bit of power for your opponent.
Yep.
And that makes this prize 2 ally start looking kind of sketchy.
And the spy from Starfall.
Yeah. Now the spy, man, she's so good in challenges. See, they're going to force some hard choices on you.
So Dorne Loyalist is going to sit himself down.
Probably so.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you know, canceling character abilities is real strong. The Lannister Iron Throne has proven that.
So, but wouldn't you just... Is he better than paying 1 more gold and not having to be able to prize 2 ally for an Iron Throne? I think I'd rather pay the 1 extra gold.
I think I might, but it's not a huge gap because he's also a solid challenge body. Even at 3 strength, 2 icons and stealth is solid in challenges.
Yeah, but I feel like he's just going to get discarded. Sandy's been playing Harmon Uller a lot lately because he doesn't listen to me. But he's been playing Harmon Uller, and he's an ally.
He's so good.
Dude, I love Harmon.
In 2 tournaments, the dude has spent exactly 2 turns on the table, like, in a row, and nothing more, ever.
He rocked some socks for me as of late.
Yeah, there's a lot of ally hate here.
And with the refugees off the list, Dissension is more popular than it has been in a long time.
That-ish.
What?
Yeah.
All day. At least my build. I got paper shields. Right. I got he calls the thinking. I'm
You're like, right.
Jorah is mean to him too. And remember, I'm in New York, so we have a lot of tar. Varys is freaking everywhere. All right.
Well, again, I think we could talk about this for a while. I think this is just going to be a very common case of we just have to wait to see how the community is going to take this card. If it were me, I do like the idea of canceling a response, and stealth is nice. Like, he has some really great ups, and he has some really big downsides, which are great balancing factors for a card. But I feel like a card like this is worth being prized one. Anyways, I'd go ahead and give him a C. I do think that he will be the pain in somebody's ass, but it won't be mine, because I'll be running Dissension.
So, well, I guess... Sorry.
Nope, you go ahead.
I'm going to give it a C-. I don't think I'll ever play him. I could see him being good in the right meta.
F-.
Wow.
Because fuck all the loyalists. They're terrible people. They should feel bad, and they don't even exist.
Okay.
I've got some moments from a ShyCon where a drunk man beat me with the original one. And I had to tell him that he was, like, how to dick me over, that I couldn't do. He asked me why I wasn't triggering any of my characters. I had to explain that he would just cancel it.
Wow.
This drunk man beat me, like, 15-4.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was a dark time in my Thrones career.
Was it Sandy?
No. I don't think Sandy was at ShyCon 3. I don't remember, like,
all right.
Wrecking Ball wandering around AJ's place, but I mean, he could have been there. So for that sheer horrible memory alone, I hate that this card is back, even in spirit. He should have stayed dead in the Black Borderlands where he belongs.
Wow. Well, I think I don't feel nearly as forceful as Kyle about it, but I still think that cancel could be pretty sweet. Even if he is looking kind of dangerous. So I don't know. I'm feeling like a C+. He looks pretty tempting, but he's sure not going to be everywhere.
All right. Kyle, why don't you throw the next one at us?
That would be the Prince of Dorne.
The Prince of Dorne. It's good to be the Prince of Dorne.
Oh, wait, did Aaron rate that last card?
Yep, I gave it a C-.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, my bad, guys. I'm sorry.
No worries.
We have the Prince of Dorne, one cause unique title, House of Card Attachment again. This one's prized 3 and reads, after you play a prized card, kneel attached house card to look the top 5 cards of your deck. Add one of those cards to your hand and shuffles the others back in. Yeah, again, I think this... lives and dies with how much attachment hate you're worried about running into that you can't cancel. I mean, Martell's probably one of the ones that can be bolder with it just because of how much cancel they have at their disposal. So that's helps solve that issue a little bit. But digging for cards is great. I mean, right now I don't run it because a lot of the Martell decks I see are running the rivers and abusing it with Arianne and Floodwaters. So one more card is a drop in the bucket. But in a world where once those go away, which I'm sure is coming, I think this would see some consideration again.
You know how everyone likes House Messengers a lot?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This makes every prize card you play a way better House Messenger. Like, it's constant card equality.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And as we discussed, there are some prized one non-uniques that Martell wants to play, which makes the title attachment look pretty tasty.
Yeah. Play a prize card means from hand, like not put into play, though, right?
Correct.
Right.
So you
wouldn't get it on the recycle out of the dead pile, but at least when you initially put him or when you initially play him.
But you would get it for an event.
Yes.
Yes.
So, like, you murdered your children.
Definitely. And I've been playing a lot of Blood Orange Grove, so I always like the option.
Dark Notch loves that. We keep arguing about it.
It's a good card. Anyways, we're not going to get into that. But anyways, there is something to be said for digging into your deck. It's always really nice. I mean, Desperate Measures is a card that I feel its original purpose was to delve into your deck. It's turned into a little bit something else. But regardless, digging 5 deep into your deck is awesome. So It's a good effect. It just depends on the prized cards, I guess, that you're going to be putting into play that are going to make it worth your while. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a good effect. I will say that. But, again, a price 3 attachment.
It's very similar to Mux and More, too.
Mm-hmm.
Except you're not giving your opponent a card.
Yeah. And turns out Mux and More wound up being a lot better than we thought it would be.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I always thought it was good. But, yeah, it is a good card.
All right.
I wasn't on the podcast back then, so I have no official record. Of that kind of
thing. Mux and More. All right, so what are we giving it?
I'll give it a C. I think it's good. Right now, it just doesn't fit, but I think there will come a time where it most certainly does.
I'm going B. I think that, except for Martell Hollow Hill, I'm going to be wanting to play this as a one of, and just anytime I play a prize card, get some more cards. Worst case, it's a much and more.
I'm going to go ahead and give it a C, which is a little bit on the higher end, actually, of my original thoughts, mainly because I think that prized is going to be something that we're going to see a lot more. I think that FFG enjoys this this way to balance a card, and so I feel like we're going to see it more than we see the naval stuff kind of get splashed, and I think we're going to see prized a fair amount more just throughout the life of the game, so... the stock just goes up in this card, obviously. So, I guess it's. I guess right now, I guess I'm putting it right there with the Lanny one, but I still think the Lanny one's better. But I don't give pluses or minuses, so deal with it.
Good for you, Darryl. You know, I think I'm going to go out on a limb here and probably really surprise Kyle. And I'm going to give Prince Adorn a pretty good rating. I'm feeling like a B minus.
Right there with me.
Even though that worst case scenario is actually worse than Aaron thought, it's not much and more. It's much more that gives your opponent 3 power. But it gives you some nice card selection on the first play, and you've got some good weenies to back that up and turn it into some really nice card advantage as the game goes. And Martell's got some good answer cards that they're going to want to be digging through, you know, to grab that he calls it thinking or Red Vengeance or what have you. So I think it's pretty solid.
Oh, and like a nice Martell rush to that potential prize 3 isn't the worst thing in the world.
Yeah.
I'll be very interested to see how much out of house stuff you see, like how many of these titles you see in other houses. That is kind of an interesting idea.
I'm sure in a lot of conquest decks you'll run both, just because it's 2 triggers for one and at least 1 trigger for the other. Again, assuming that attachment control isn't rampant.
But,
I mean, it kind of is, but Lannister still doesn't have any. Like, Barrett doesn't really have any. Lesser conditions. Mm-hmm. So it can only get so prevalent.
The Stark stuff blanks it, and then you're not paying price.
Yep.
You're not wrong. I mean, I feel like if you're going to run these, you should probably run Nightmares. I don't know. Well, maybe not. That actually doesn't make sense.
Nightmares doesn't blank an attachment.
Oh, it can't? I thought it just blanked a card. Is it only character location?
Character from location.
Oh, damn. I hope I never cheated. Okay. Who's next?
All
right. Awkward.
I am, but I don't know what card.
It would be Hoster Tully.
Oh, there goes my great card.
Let's just skip the Starks.
Yeah, really. Starks were uninteresting again. Hoster Tully. And he is cost 1, unique, obviously. Strength 2 with the power icon, Lord House Tully. Prized 1. Response: after Hoster Tully leaves play, search the top 5 cards of your deck for any number of House Tully cards, reveal them, and add them to your hand. Shuffle the other cards back into your deck. Oh, and a Noble Crest.
Solid in Tully's, horrible in non-Tully.
Well, family duty honor all over again. In Tully's. I mean, the most common way that he's going to be leaving play in games is military claim, but the
or Tully... Valor.
Well, yeah, potentially. But neither one of those works nicely for the Tully theme that FFG kind of pushed out there with the this defense, don't lose challenges with Riverrun and the, I forget the name of the guy where you draw a card after you have not lost a military challenge.
Guard Riverrun.
Yes. Yeah, and Hoster does not really play well with that kind of theme, I don't think.
He's got a Valor.
Well,
or,
yeah.
But
if you're getting hit with a Valor, you're losing all that board that you're using on that defense. So he can kind of help you populate it again. Yeah. I don't know.
March to the Wall. It's good anyways.
We are getting more Tully support. We are definitely getting more Tully support next cycle. Mm-hmm. It's announced. It's one of the things that they said they're pushing, so...
Okay. Could be decent. There should be a Stark location that says whenever you search one, like whenever you would search the top X cards, search one deeper. Isn't that a card?
Yep. Yeah.
So Carhole, just run like
three, I believe.
Run like three of those. Run this guy.
All right. So I give it a C. What does Daryl give it?
Yeah, I'll also give it a C. I think the House Tully is not really there, but hey, if they're going to give it more support next cycle, I mean, hey. Rise of the Red Fork, bitch. Best card in the game.
Rise of the Red Fork, our House Tully.
That's right.
So
even better.
It would find them anyway.
That's I don't know if it would.
Yeah, their House Tully.
Yes, it would.
So it would.
Oh, no. Oh, I know it would. I just, never mind. I thought we were talking, like, never mind. Moving on.
I'm giving it a D until we see new Tully stuff. Tully suck.
I mean,
Edmure Tully
I have a pretty
rule.
Soft spot for Tullys. So I want to like Hoster, but he's not great even in a Tully build. He's like
for
a C-.
An old guy.
Yeah. But in the strong Tully builds that, again, like I said, want to lean on that defensive side, I think I want the old Hoster more for the strength boost.
Hmm.
Sure, you're probably right. But no, I'll say you're wrong anyways.
And with the new Vyman and stuff, though, and Edmure, and, you know, Blackfish is a Tully, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, his start could go up a little bit.
If Tully's themes are going to be, like, add and reveal more cards, and, like, we get more support for that, then he could be very good.
Yeah.
But for the time being, no.
Yeah, I get you. Okay.
Okay.
It's back to me, isn't
back
it?
Back to you, homie T.
Yep. All right. I actually get to read something cool.
Ah, damn
this
it.
No, you don't.
The Blackfish. Yeah. He is, of course, a unique Stark character. 4 cost, 3 strength, a military, and a power icon. He's a lord, a knight, and House Tully. Prize 2, renown. While the Blackfish is attacking, each character that dies from military claim gains prize 1. Oh, and he has a Warcrest.
Eryx is better.
Eryx is significantly better. Card advantage
moving
over
on.
An extra power.
And they don't kneel to attack after a while, right?
Yeah, that
matters. I have literally never gotten to use that ability. I've tried.
Seen it like once.
And never have.
This could be... I think this is really something that's going to be for the Stark Siege decks. I mean, that's an extra power, bro.
Dude, no. I play a lot of Siege. Like, I won DC with Siege. There's no fucking way this goes over the old Blackfish. Siege needs cards more than it needs one more power.
Yeah?
Well, when 4 cost is kind of cashy. 4 for 3. Those 3 for 4, I could see prize 2. But he's...
I don't know,
really,
man.
Like the other one. Tyrion,
like the other one more.
Claim 2 if plots, named, murder events, like, really?
If he was named anything but the Blackfish, I probably like him a lot.
Oh, dies for claim, I see. Damn it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to mention, too.
Yeah, I was like, if he was anything other than the Blackfish, I'm probably like, you know, he's kind of cool. But competing with his other version, it makes this very tough.
He's just not a
Now, I will say
character.
This with the caveat that we are learning about some form of rotation or card pool manipulation at Worlds, and having another Blackfish where maybe that competition isn't a competition anymore. He could be...
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh.
So, but in the meantime, his biggest con is that he's named the frickin' Blackfish. So for that alone, I gotta give him like a C.
Well,
sorry,
that's kind of brutal.
I think a C is too good for him. I'm giving him a D. I don't see a single deck I'd like him.
Bad. I mean, I think I would want to play around with him. You know, try out something with a lot of 2 claim, and then you win a military with him, and you're gaining 3 power at least. Then, you know, that's interesting. Of course, winter's coming to maybe bump claim some more. I kind of want to experiment with him on that Shaga angle. Mm-hmm. But I do acknowledge card advantage on the other Blackfish is a pretty big draw. So, I don't know. I'd probably give this Blackfish a C to the other one's B.
Mm. Man, I want to give him a B. I mean, I understand price 2 sucks, but he is renowned, which, yes, the other one is too. But I think that this is going to help with those claim 2 plots. And gaining extra power with that and out of Siege. I really think I'd run him in Siege.
If you did some kind of weird focused offense, plus winter is coming, plus whatever their favorite was, kind of mass claim military challenge thing, I think it's much more Shaga than Jamie. It'd be cool, though. Claim 5 power off of essentially a board resetting challenge.
Exactly.
It'd be a cool Shock and Awe moment. It wouldn't win a tournament. But people will talk about it. And, like, this dude totally ruffle stomped.
Man. And then somebody Red Vengeances you, and then you give your opponent a ton of power. Right. Would that happen, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Wait, no. Wait.
Each character that dies for military claim...
You would get the power still. It doesn't say it has to be your opponent's characters.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Wait, No, it's each character that dies claims. Yeah, geez, I can't talk. Dies for claim.
You would,
gains prized 1.
Yes, you right. Would give your opponent all that power.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Damn you, Martell! You're ruining us. I'm just kidding. I love Martell. Okay.
Daryl, I think you're up with Warden of the North.
Man, I really like the Blackfish. Okay, Warden of the North. It's a Warden. It's unique, cost 1, it's an attachment, title, prize 2, attached to your house card, response, after you play a prize card, kneel attached house card to choose a character. That character gains stealth and does not kneel to defend until the end of the round.
I'm glad that I never knew that Hodor was a Warden of the North.
That's right, he is.
No, not Hodor. He's one of those, was it Ranger of Winter?
Oh, yeah.
Or the Northern Infantry.
Yeah. I've never seen the Northern Infantry played, but
I
played
them.
Can be surprisingly frustrating.
I've played the Northern Infantry because I did not read them correctly and thought they were the Northern Cavalry. That was really fun. Yeah. That's not what those guys do, Daryl. I was like, oh, this is the wrong card, because I'm obviously running an agenda. You're running an agenda. It's just not working. So, anywho, I had recently messed around with Ranger of Winter and actually saw some success. So there's definitely something to be said for not kneeling to defend.
That guy is boss.
Yeah, he can be really awesome, for sure.
I mean, and he's in 3 challenges and can't be stealthed around. That can potentially stop a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Right, but,
but I don't want to talk too much about the Ranger.
How many Tricons does Stark have that are going to want to use this? Because you want this on a Tricon, right?
I'd be okay with my Northern Cavalry flank gets it.
Jorah.
Static Canals. Kindly Man.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking of Tricons.
Tricons?
Yeah, I feel like those aren't going to win the challenges they're defending.
They don't have a lot.
Jorah, maybe.
Yeah. Jorah might.
But it can be any character, again, if we're messing around.
Yeah, there are neutrals.
Yeah.
You know,
and just conquest stuff.
Would you rather have this than Frozen Outpost?
It depends.
Tough. I will say, like I said, man, not kneeling to defend has really worked out for me. Previously, so hard to say.
It's good with ice.
Hard to say, Needle will be able to trigger it as well. I mean, I don't know. There's not a ton, right?
With ice, they can't attack you at all.
Well, that's a good point. So, Geez, rate it. I wish I didn't have to. I hate rating these damn attachments because I don't know what's going to happen. Not kneeling to defend is good, not great. It's cost one, only price two as opposed to the price three of the other ones. I'm going to give it a C as well. Mainly because its price cost is lower than the others, but not kneeling to defend can be neat.
I think it's kind of okay. I don't know. It's another warden attachment. It's not really giving me...
Probably a D from Will.
Yeah, it's not really giving me card advantage or anything. It's not really a surprise effect that affects their board in any way. It's okay. But it is only price 2 compared to some of the others. So, gosh. What's Stark have in the way of cheap prize new, stuff, though?
Cheap
probably
stuff.
Probably their specialty
know.
Guy.
Yeah, they'll probably get the military one.
Yeah, and then that
imagine
black
so. That blackfish. Yeah, maybe they'll get a location or two, maybe? I don't know.
Astute listeners will notice a brief musical interlude at a very unusual portion of our review. This is because, due to unforeseen technical difficulties, we lost about the latter quarter of the show. So, what follows here is our attempt to rapidly redo the last few cards of the chapter pack, in a little bit of a prop and slop talk about the final episode of this season of Game of Thrones, done rapidly the next night after the initial recording.
All right, so next up, I guess, is Horse Lord, 2 for 2 power icon, Dothraki, prized 1, and like all the other specialized guys, while Horse Lord is participating in a challenge, characters with more than one icon do not count their strengths. And my first blush tells me that of all these specialized guys, he's probably one of my favorite, just because there are not a terribly high number of monocon power icon characters. I see a lot of play. And Dothraki, he helps there. So I think he does a lot compared to some of the other ones. I mean, the other ones have perks too, but I feel like he really will fit in really, really nicely with those Dothraki builds, especially if you're running something like Heir to the Iron Throne. Being able to essentially steal up one of your power challenges takes a huge burden off of those decision points on who to attack with or who to defend with.
Yeah, I think I agree, especially with the Heir to the Iron Throne. If you're wanting to try the Targ Rush deck that it really looks like they're trying to make viable this cycle, I think Horse Lord's going to be a pretty strong piece of that to just force through one of those challenges without making you commit as heavily to it at all.
Yeah,
I mean, the thing does work
horse.
On defense.
Yeah, good call.
It works every way. It's fantastic. It's a way to make sure that like they can't steal your power. It goes in almost every non-burn Targ build. So Dothraki uses it, Rush uses it, Heir to the Iron Throne. I might even throw it in just as a way to get some chains on a Maester. It's a very good card.
I'm even tempted to throw a couple copies into a burn deck. Like, a lot of those are slower and the opponent can get an early power lead. And to have him as a way to mitigate that early power bleed while you get the screws down with your burn, I could see it being an option.
I don't know. My burn decks are all pretty tight. Like, maybe House of Dreams Pit, but it seems more unlikely that I will be putting that in, like, a Hollow Hill where I have to survive and everything else.
But Targ, of all the houses, I feel does the best job of souping up its characters, has a lot of really fantastic positive attachments, that you can do to make ordinary characters into something amazing. If you can put like a Dany's Favor on him and found a way, I mean, he instantly can just like be your entire defense. Because unless they're coming at you with monocons that are higher than 5 strength, you can just negate whole challenges. And so that's kind of cool. I mean, I'm not saying that's by far and away the best use for him, but there are some clever things you can do with these specialized guys. I feel like Targ can especially take advantage of that. And with the burn effects, I mean, targeted removal is huge out of Targ, so if a monocon does hit the board, you can just knock it out.
That's a good point.
Alright, so let's rate
it. It's a great point. I'll give it a B+. I think he's really, really good. Like Aaron said, he goes in almost every build. I like him a lot.
I think I'm going B-. I like him a lot. I just don't know if he's, like, the higher A-ish cards are, like, win game cards. And he helps you, but he doesn't win you the game.
I think, you know, I'm willing to split the difference and just give him a solid B. I agree, he's going to be in a bunch of builds, and he does a lot of things that the Targ almost didn't even realize it wanted. And now that it has it available, it's going to be pretty good.
Okay. Next card is Daenerys Targaryen, 3 cost, unique, 4 strength, prize 2, intriguing power icons, no crest, no keywords, well, prized, I guess, whatever. Response, after you declare Daenerys Targaryen as an attacker, choose a character without attachments, controlled by the defensive player. If you win the challenge, kill that character. It's ridiculously ahead of the cost curve. Yes, there are ways to cancel it, but it just puts an incredible, incredible amount of pressure because she doesn't have to be alone. It can be done a million times a phase if she could be stood. Or she's not kneeling, or there are no men like me, or dragon tree, or rusted sword with rusted maester tech. Pretty much anything, and she's one of the best characters in the game the second she hits the board. So I'm not even waiting. A+.
Yeah, she's probably my favorite card in this whole pack. Maybe not necessarily by when she'll necessarily stand the test of time as the best card to come out of it, but just from the flash and the sexiness, I mean, this is everything you want in that kind of premiere card that people talk about. So yeah, she's phenomenal. And unless you're running dedicated dragons, I see no reason not to run her in the deck.
Sexiness, I think, is debatable. The art, not that sexy as far as Daenerys art goes.
Well, look at the text box where it really
Yeah, goes. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty amazing. There's been a lot of prize stuff that I've been kind of iffy about. Daenerys is completely worth it. Probably still worth it at, like, prize 3. That's just fantastic ability. She's a lady and a queen, and so she shuts down the opponents without being hampered herself. The old Alanis that queens turn off has been seeing some play again lately. Jane Westerling still frequently sees play in Stark decks. So there's a good chance that that's going to be relevant too.
And she's cost 3, so to be a dragon hits her. She alone almost makes Stay of Execution a better play over King's Landing Coup. I mean, I don't know if I believe that, but it makes you at least think about it. I mean, she's that good of a queen.
Yeah. Or even just at, like, 4 cost, you can push across, like, a power challenge with just her. And if you can get that unopposed through, you know, various means, just committing her, you've got the strength for Seductive Promise or something like that. But having that 4 strength on that cheap of a body isn't really nice.
Well, and just that, like Aaron said, the insane pressure. If you use Fire Maid Flesh on her, now they have to either overcommit to defense or not do any challenges so they can block it off. Otherwise, you're getting claim for intrigue power and killing 2 characters. I mean, that's phenomenal.
Yeah.
With 3 golden influence in an event. 2 well, cards.
She makes Iron Thrones really playable out of house.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, that Bitterbridge, too.
Yeah, actually, Bitterbridge could be a very nice tool against her.
But yeah, you better tech for her and have a way to handle her, otherwise she's going to decimate your board.
Mm-hmm. And one other thing I remember Kyle mentioned when we were talking about her the other day is it kind of seems like she's maybe pushing the intrigue and power angle for Heir to the Iron Throne rather than military and power and kind of give them some options. So
Piat Pri, Drogo, King, Mad King. There's mm-hmm. definitely some options there.
Yeah, well, I'm willing to jump on board and rate her pretty well as well. I think she is definitely an A card.
Yeah. I don't know if I officially said it, but yes, she's definitely an A. Maybe that legendary S rating. I don't know if...
I've heard rumors any of that has made the S cut. Rating.
But...
I think so. I think some of it survived. Maybe.
Who knows? No, she's great. Nothing but positives. I think it's on okay. The wheel.
To me with Cal. Now, this is a card that'll seem familiar to listeners because we spoiled it on the cast a few weeks ago. It is a Targ unique attachment. It's a title, prize 2, attached to your house card. Response, after you play a prized card, kneel attached house card to choose a character. That character gains deadly and does not kneel to attack or defend during power challenges until the end of the round. I really dig this, actually, as far as the titles go. Of course, it looks like it's pushing that same kind of super power Targ deck. First turn you play it, you're getting a not kneeler with deadly to force through some challenges. And then the thing is, Targ's got some other great prized cards that it does want to play, certainly in that type of build, to trigger it. It's got Fire and Splash. Do what?
Two of them are in this pack. We just reviewed two.
Yeah, exactly. Those two and Fire Made Flesh, I think you'll be able to trigger Cal pretty consistently. And I think there's going to be some games once we kind of figure out this rush build here. There's going to be some games where you're going to drop Cal, trigger it one turn, next turn, play a Fire Made Flesh, trigger that Cal, and just close out the game.
I could see that. Yeah, that'd be cool. It also adds deadly, so it's furthering the intrigue power, so you don't need military necessarily to kill things.
Mm-hmm.
It's just making sure that you're able to get through. It's not such a big flashy effect that your opponents are going to want to, like, go through everything to cancel it. Maybe he calls it thinking, but, like, they're not necessarily going to want to use Heron Hall to kill somebody to cancel it. It's got a lot going for it. It's a very powerful card, or it's a very powerful effect for the one real build it'll be used in.
Yeah, and it's only prized one, so you're not risking a ton here.
Prize
I feel like
two.
It's right in a sweet spot.
Prize two.
Oh.
Prize two.
But I still feel like it's in a nice sweet spot where I'm okay running it. A lot of the attachment hate you're going to see is against Targ, so I don't know. I'm not terribly worried about it. Like, if any house is going to be able to pick off that Viz that's giving you problems, it's going to be Targ, so.
Yeah, definitely so. I mean, and it's nice that this whole strategy, like, with the focus on the power challenges, empowers you to take back the prized power that you may lose over the course of the game. So that offsets that weakness, I think.
So not to get too off topic, but what restricted would you guys run with this kind of deck?
That's a tough call.
My gut says Fear a Winner.
Mine went Long Lances.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
It would be one or the other.
But I was trying to figure out if I could justify the influence to fit in some ambush guys so I could pop them in the challenge phase to stand things.
I might be willing to do this at Knights of the Hollow Hell. I don't think that's the worst idea.
In like a pre-Rivers world, I lean Fear. Once whatever answer FFG comes up with for how prolific card advantage has become, I think Long Lances it's gotta be one or the other. I mean, that was the other one that came to mind, and I feel like putting on, it would take games to see which one you crave more.
Yeah.
Right, well, but I mean, if you're a winner on two power challenges, I mean, that's four claim.
Yeah.
Once
you've got a mid-game.
Once the Mad King comes out, yeah, but yeah, Fear has to be a mid-game. Once the Mad King comes out, let's build that deck on the podcast.
That would actually be really fun. I think we should. So, rating-wise, though, I do actually like Cal quite a bit as far as these title cards go. It's going to be pretty key in that build, and I think that build's... It's going to be definitely attempted in Joust. I don't know how great it's going to be. But it's definitely going to be pretty awesome in Melee, it looks like. So I think I'm willing to give Cal a solid B.
I'm going to go C+. I like it an awful lot, but I like it an awful lot for exactly that one build. Besides that, I don't think it would ever actually meet the cut.
I'll give it a B minus C+. I think it fits in that solid support card that helps round out and give you that boost. But it is kind of specialized. I think you get the best use out of a very specific kind of build. Am I up?
I think so.
With a good old Heron Hall. Nothing noteworthy here. Two cost, unique location, Stronghold Riverlands, prized 2. And if Heron Hall has 3 or more gold tokens on it, discard it from play, cannot be saved. And then its response is kill a character you control to cancel a triggered effect, then place 1 gold token on Heron Hall.
So, this is going to be the most ubiquitous neutral card this side of Valar. Like, at least one of these goes in almost every deck that runs more than, like, 20 characters.
Yeah, it's good control, and it's easy, cheap control that you can fit into, like, something aggro, like Dothraki, or like a Tully Swarm, or anything along those lines, because you do have Chuds to kill off with no consequence. This gives you the easy control that you've been lacking.
Yeah, I think that's where it's really going to shine, are the aggro builds with the characters to spare who want to negate a really debilitating control effect so they can continue their beatdown.
When we first started talking about this on Card Game DB, like, myself and a couple other people went through a bunch of cards, and just every house has at least, like, 3 or 4 guys that you'd just be like, yeah, I'd totally run that just for Heron Hall so I can repeatedly cancel stuff. So, it's... pretty much every house has stuff that it's willing to just be like, yep, this is Heron Hall fuel that I can get a few challenges out of besides.
No, yeah, I think... I mean, you do have to have some considerations when you're building with it, but I think if done right, this effect can be insanely powerful. Any triggered effect with no restriction can be huge, can save you games.
It destroys things like Favorable Ground and Storm the Shore, is that what it's called? No, Storm the Gates. Like, any yep. big effects, any big, massive stuff is just no longer nearly as viable.
Mm-hmm. Almost makes you wonder if they could afford to take Westeros Bleeds back off the restricted list once Heron Hall is available.
Eh, it's not and say we did.
Yeah, it's an entirely different discussion I'm supposed to get into. You know what else it does? Is it completely mucks with Valor. I mean, it kills the ability to use saves as long as there's enough characters on the board. Like, rules-wise, as far as the timing goes for listeners, saves and cancels happen at the same time, and so none of your characters are yet dead at the time that you would be killing them to cancel your opponent's saves. So as long as you have, you know, spare characters on the board that you've not already used with Heron Hall right then, you can just keep canceling any save they attempt. And since that passive effect that discards Heron Hall when it gets past 3 gold, past 2, when it gets to 3 or more gold tokens, since that passive won't actually go into effect until after you get out of that window, you can just keep going till the cows come home, basically.
Valar really needed the pump. Suddenly, like, Valar was just another plot. People were just cutting it all together. Valar is a major part of the game, and the boost is really important. But two more things that really screws up. If you're running Outwit, and you, like, this can cancel the Outwit, right? Is that the triggered effect?
Yeah, should be able to.
So, if you're Valar anyway, you might as well cancel that Outwit. And it also makes prized events specifically a lot harder to run.
Like Counterplot, which I immediately thought of when you mentioned Outwit.
Yep, specifically Counterplot. Because then, you know, you get 3 power. You're giving them 3 power for nothing.
Yeah, and still losing your characters or whatever it was you were trying to cancel. Yeah, which is a bummer. I thought there was a good chance that Counterplot could shine for a little bit there. Maybe Power Behind the Throne rush build or something, but Harrenhal's going to shut that back down.
It will be interesting to see. Especially when you get two out there. Like, use both and exhaust your boards to cancel each other's Harrenhals.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll create some very interesting scenarios. Like you said, you have to have the characters to spare. Attrition is going to become very key. I think a choke deck with this could be brutal. Because you're getting only a few characters on the board as is. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this... It will definitely change the game, but how it changes it, I think, is yet to be seen. It'll be interesting. For sure.
Yeah. Boy. It's hard to say.
I don't want to rate it. I feel like it could be so many things. I want to just give it this big, like, Pandora's box rating.
Yeah, S. That means S.
I mean, I really wouldn't want to mess up my trend of underrating locations. So in that case, I'm going to give Harrenhal like an A minus. Just to downplay that a little bit.
Yeah, you'll be wrong.
Yeah, I'll give it the S. I mean, it's like I said, there's so many. The interactions and the cost are such a unique, strange thing that we have not had in the game before that I think everyone agrees that it'll be impactful. But like I said, I just feel like because of how many different ways you can take it, that the impact it has is going to be, I don't know, strange.
All right, and now the Brave Companions. It is an attachment, unique. Cost one, prized one, title. Attached to the neutral faction house card. Response. After a neutral character you only play, kneel attached house card to attach that character face down to the Brave Companions instead. Marshalling. Kneel attached house card to return an attached face down character to your hand. I like it. I mean, it doesn't make the neutral house great, but I like it.
It's a nifty effect. I like the thought of this kind of recursing vibe that you get. I mean, yeah, you can only get neutrals, which right now there's not a ton of all-star neutrals, but there are some. I think we touched on this. Ygritte, Cold Hands, Varus, there are definitely card neutrals that I would love to repeatedly get back over and over again.
Shagwell, so, maybe
Solo, Shagwell, Kingsguard.
Yeah.
Yeah, Devil, definitely Kingsguard.
Yeah, it's basically a repeatable save for one neutral every time, you know?
Yeah. And this one's
it's
only
in such a weird
one.
Window. So, just the way it's done is, I think it's iffy. And being able to let them sit and pick an ideal time to pull them off. I mean, it's very cool. It's a very cool card.
I don't think I would sit on them for very long. You're just asking to get that attachment discarded and then lose whatever you have attached to it still.
I mean, if you're playing against Lannister, why not?
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fair.
And there are times,
protect
I mean,
you from intrigue
if
and-
you... Yeah, if you have some of these neutrals that hit on something like Ygritte, You leave her on there and just wait because they know she's on there, so they're not going to play anything while you have Trait of the Nip out. Or if they do have some Night's Watch or neutrals, like, they're not going to play them. So, I mean, there is some, you know, threat of activation there that is worth exploring.
All right. So, what are we rating it?
I'll give it a solid B. I think it's just as good as Call. So, I'll and be consistent.
So, being consistent, I will give it a B-. It doesn't need a prize card to go off. It just goes off whenever, you know, a neutral character leaves play if you have the neutral house card. And it's actually one less prize. It's just, I'm honestly penalizing a little bit because, well, I'd have to be running neutral house. I don't know if I could do that competitively.
Yeah, Will. As far as the Brave Companions go, I mean, I kind of like it. It's sort of a reusable save. I'm not sure I really dig it as much as some of the other titles, like Cal or the Martell one. But it's okay. I don't know. I'm feeling like a C, probably. Yeah, just a C.
Okay.
All right.
Last card is you.
Indeed. The final card of the pack, Dark Wings, Dark Words. This is an agenda by Cordy. Yeah. Man, I still can't talk. Corey Faraday, there we go, who won back in 2011 for Melee. And the text is, your minimum deck size is 75 cards. You cannot have more than one copy of each event card by title in your deck. You cannot trigger event card effects from your dead pile or discard. Response, after you play an event card, draw one card. I kind of dig this. It seems pretty inventive. It gives you some options to play around with and really kind of explore some of these events that don't see much play right now. I do have to admit, we were kind of down on the podcast, and I was certainly down on Corey's first agenda, House of Dreams, when it came out, because I felt like it was going to kind of restrict some design space in where FFG could go with unique locations. But on the other hand, I feel like Dark Wings, Dark Words does not have that problem, and instead kind of opens things up.
I'm not entirely sure how good this is. I know that if you run like 20 events, that this looks really good, even if they're all one-ofs. Event recursion to the hand is still completely viable. This can be very, very good, or it can be nothing in particular, but I'm going to say right now that I will be playing this a lot. I think this is going to be a lot of fun, especially as more like solid one-of event that you don't mind just a one-of keep coming out.
Yeah,
I love that Corey's agendas have always tweaked the like way you deck build, which is, you know, one of his passions. So it's cool that this is an agenda that will shape that in a big way. And I'm just excited to see some of the fun things. Even if they're not tier one, I think it, like Conquest, is something that opens up a wide range of new possibilities, and I think that's fun.
Yeah. So,
ratings?
You know, it's kind of hard for me to judge. Agendas often wind up being pretty decent. But there's definitely going to be some variance in this one. But on the other hand, it does provide card advantage. Card advantage, generally draw, is king, as they say. So I think this is probably still going to be pretty decent. I'm going to tentatively give Dark Wings, Dark Words a B+ for right now.
I'll give it an A because I like it more than Will does.
I know I went off at the start of this about being a pure Jamie, but I guess not where Corey's concerned, because I'm a big fan of the guy. I'm a big fan of this card. I'm giving this an A.
It's a lot of fun. Like I've always said on the show, anything I heard is new ideas. I think is healthy for the game, good for the game, and this certainly does it.
And that's Ancestral Home.
There you have it. Props and slops.
I'm going to slop Daryl's recording programming.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that is fair. Let's jump right out there and slop the fact that we lost the last quarter of the episode.
Yeah, about the start of Targon we seemed a little less energetic, it's because we had these conversations and we're trying to, you know,
yeah,
rehash without
have them again.
It is tricky to have the same conversation right after you just did it.
At some point, Will's like, remember when we talked about this the other day? I'm like, oh, you mean on the podcast yesterday?
Yes. I tried to make it sound less obvious, but yeah, that was definitely what I meant.
Fuck you, Daryl. Fuck you.
You also may notice Daryl was not there for the last half a dozen cards. That would be why. Not because we, you know, killed him and hid his body in a trunk in Vegas or anything, but just because he was not available this evening. But, yeah, I mean, I think we're missing something way more important, though. The final episode of this season of Game of Thrones, which we can talk about now because Daryl's not even here for us to, you know, spoil stuff.
So, but everyone else, spoilers, if you haven't seen it.
Yeah. Oh, spoilers ahoy.
So, I'm swapping it.
Really? I would prop it.
I gave it a question mark.
The full gamut, then. All right, why would you slop that, Aaron?
Three real reasons. First, the Taisha story. If you've... well, we already said spoilers, so now book spoilers.
Right.
But the Tyrion's first wife that Jaime and his father told him was a whore and then had his entire Brax rape and then made Tyrion rape her less, it turns out that that was a lie. She actually really was just a Crofter's daughter or something along those lines.
Something like that.
And really was innocent. And Jaime had been lying to Tyrion forever on his father's orders. And when he releases him from prison, he tells his brother that he and his brother have a huge falling out. Tyrion then goes to murder Shay. Well, goes and murder Shay. And then when his father calls Taisha, who is not a whore, a whore, he murders his father.
Mm-hmm.
It gave it so much more depth. It's got, like, calling Shay a whore, well, I get why it is annoying to Tyrion, and like, they had much more development in the show. She was a whore. It's not like this was some big insult that his father was saying to him. The whole Taisha thing, after he pretended she was a whore forever, and then we get the next, like, we should get the next two seasons of where do whores go? Wherever whores go.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fantastic, and that's all just gone now. There's more reasons, but I guess we should discuss this first.
You know, I was okay with the change. I mean, I accept that there are things, and backstory is going to be probably the hardest one to convey into TV. Because without doing strange flashbacks and tons of backstory and exposition, it's hard to convey that
depth. I mean,
they
could give us 10 minutes of backstory about beetle crushing.
Yeah, right. Like that.
I like
be,
that
like,
scene
mentioning
a
the Taisha
lot.
Thing.
But
yeah,
I mean,
but
like,
Taisha actually means
care.
Something.
I mean, I know she does, but it's hard to make viewers care when you never see her, and it's just a exposition. It's just another story that Tyrion tells. And it would take up a lot of time of the camera on Tyrion talking, which is not a bad thing, but you can only have so much of it. And
well, we got exactly
I understand.
Like, that was the Beatles story.
Think
the exact time for the Beatles story.
But it wouldn't. Like, the 10 minutes wouldn't do it. It wouldn't do it justice at all. And we'd be sitting here as book readers going, oh, yes, this is so good. Anyone who doesn't read the books are going, I just don't see why I give a shit. I mean, they would.
People,
and it's heartbreaking saying that.
But everyone's, like, surprised he kills his father over the Shay thing as it was. Like, the people I know that watched it were like, why did Tyrion flip out about that? That was really weird. Like, it didn't seem, you know? Why did she immediately grab the knife?
Like, he goes out there with the crossbow. He's gonna kill his dad. There is no doubt. That was not a confrontation that he's walking away from.
Yeah.
And I just choosing... I think it was just a moment of control. Just for once, for his dad, for him just to be like, these are the ground rules that we're playing by, and you're gonna do it. And when he doesn't, he kills him. It's like the one time he can really surpass his father.
It's changes Tyrion so much as a character.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, but this is, I mean, this moment is exactly what the crushing the Beatles is all about. Like, that illusion is straight up his dad and him. He is the Beatles, and his dad is whoever that guy's name was.
I don't buy like, that.
I mean,
at
that's
all.
The point.
No,
totally.
The whole
it
point
is.
Was...
It's him wondering, why is my father trying to crush me? Like, there's no point here. It is senseless violence.
Yeah, and but his father is exactly senseless violence. His father has a plan.
His father is a Cylon?
No, his father. Okay. His father's
they
whole
have a plan
to do the Jaime thing, to get Jaime to, like, renounce the Kingsguard, and then Tyrion takes the Black, and he doesn't have to worry about her inheriting his land. His father wasn't just screwing with him. His father was trying to get Jaime to be the heir to Casterly Rock and no longer remember the Kingsguard.
Well, he does this his whole life. And you have to remember, it's in the show world, he even says it when he's in it. He's like, you have wanted me dead my whole life. And Tywin says, yes, I have. I mean, that is what that scene was about, was I am getting crushed for no reason. There's no reason why my father would want to put me to death. But he's going to. It's senseless to Tyrion. And that's exactly what the crushing the Beatles is about. And I think the way they played it in the show is a much more streamlined version that still gets that emotional impact across on why this is going down without all of the backstory you would need for the picture painted in the books to work. Now, is the picture in the books better? Yes, but you also have 5 novels that are all multiple inches thick to paint up, whereas you get 10 episodes a season. I mean, I understand there are moments that they changed that I thought were weird, good, but changing Tyrion's drive here was not one of them. Now, I was bummed that Tyrion does not... The falling out with Jaime was weird, that instead they embrace the moment instead of him lying and saying he killed Joffrey, and Jaime saying, yeah, I lied to you about your first wife. Like, there is a falling out there, and that relationship now ends on a totally different note than the one in the books. And that is significant. I don't know how I feel about it.
Yeah.
Because until, from the way now, it has no consequence. I mean, Tyrion's gone, and Jaime's off doing his thing, and how I feel about each other is kind of irrelevant. But
it also affects Tyrion going forward. Tyrion spends most of the next few books completely devastated and, like, utterly annihilated in a way that this story doesn't lead him to.
Which might be good, because, honestly, he was kind of boring in book 5. There were...
I didn't think so.
He meets some other interesting people, and I enjoyed seeing those other people and finding out about them. But Tyrion himself does very little.
I don't know if I agree.
You can still have him be sad, because you just replace a lot of that loss with the loss of Shay. And I know that that's not what she is in the books, but it's kind of like that redheaded whore from the first couple seasons. It's more like what she represents. And he is still gone. I mean, there is a lot to be sad about. He has no one. He is exiled. He is... hardly even a Lannister anymore. He's just a midget on a boat going to God knows where.
Midget on a boat.
There's plenty to be upset about, and I'm sure he will be. But the scene with his father I thought was fine. It was the scene with Jaime that left me kind of puzzled as to the huge change there, and I feel like it could have gone the other way and been just fine. I thought that was weird. I thought Cersei re-hooking up with Jaime was really odd.
Yeah.
Because somehow they need to have a falling out, and he has to get his ass out of King's Landing. So I don't see how that goes down now, unless they have something about him freeing Tyrion, and that's what does it. But it seems weird that when that relationship, especially with the, like, was it rape, was it not scandal, was primed for them to be dunzo and him to get out of town, now seems weird. And I just don't see how they're going to get him out.
So, as a comic book reader, something you come to terms with is when different writers, or in this case, different directors, handle different parts of the story, sometimes someone is just tone deaf, and you kind of have to go, well, that's not what really should have happened. Like, yeah. Jaime raped Cersei in the show. It's not really something, you know, that we have to dwell on too
much.
Can
I consider that the tone-deaf part and pretend it didn't happen?
Exactly. It wasn't supposed to happen because, like, the guy who directed it was a moron and didn't realize that he was directing a rape scene. And it's more or less meant to not be rape. So I'm willing to just go, it was meant to not be rape, that guy was a dick, and move on with life.
Yeah,
I mean, even if that scene, I went back and read it, and if you just continue that scene like 10 more seconds, Cersei, like, flips her tune.
Yeah.
I mean, even with the horrible way it's portrayed, you could have flipped the switch, but he just doesn't. But that's not here nor there.
So.
But yeah, they're on good terms. How do you split them up now, when she just denounced her father and said, Jaime, you're the only one in my life? How did she forsake him and send him on his merry way? She shouldn't even be mad about her dad dying, because now she has no Mary Loras.
She's mostly, I guess, just going to be mad Tyrion got away, and then maybe he'll admit something, that he had something to do with it, and she'll send him away. I don't know.
Yeah.
Nothing else makes sense.
I could see that happening.
That seems so weird after... I mean, maybe, and that's probably what is going to happen, but it just seems odd.
But speaking of happening, I mean, we've spent an awful lot of time just zoomed in on, you know, Tyrion and Tywin and Cersei and Jaime, just the Lannisters. There was a ton more that happened in this episode that they threw at us.
Oh, yeah. That Brienne Hound fight, that was kick-ass.
That is exactly what I was going to bring up, because... You know, different characters are, at this point in the show, at different points of where they would be in the novels. It's not all matching up to just the end of Book 3. And I think what they did here with Brienne and bringing her around to the Hound and everything, while not accurate to the books, is actually way better than what Martin did by having her wander around aimlessly for the entirety of Book 4. I dug it, and the fight was arguably... more brutal than the Viper and the Mountains fight. It was great.
Oh, yeah.
It seemed to have lesser stakes, but it was definitely better choreographed.
Yeah.
And just the changing from swords to punching and kicking to rocks, I mean, it flowed really well. And both of their, like, rugged, grunt-like personalities came out. It was a very cool moment.
Arya's the only Stark I like, so...
True. Well, that also puts a twist on that, because when Jaime goes out a-wandering, and he runs into what he thinks is Brienne, she's like, hey, I found the Stark girl, and he follows her. Well, now, at least in the show, she has found a Stark kid. Yeah, I know it's a different Stark. I know it's a different Stark kid, but...
We also haven't gotten Lady Stoneheart at all. So.
Yeah. I can see why that waited, but... and I hope she's included, but she doesn't do anything. Like, up until this point, other than being like, hey, look, Caitlyn's not dead, she doesn't do anything, other than hang Brienne.
Almost hang Brienne.
Kill Freys.
And kill Freys.
Yeah, she doesn't hang Brienne. She almost hangs Brienne.
I guess. There's stuff, but...
Something that bothered me from a narrative structure standpoint... We had that whole episode devoted to the battle, which was really a whole episode devoted to Ygritte dying and Jon rising in the Night's Watch. Stannis showing up really was the climax of that episode. And to do it a week later in, like, a lesser scene just rang so false.
Yeah, it seemed really bizarre. And even though they showed a lot of people fighting, and they spent a good bit on extras there and editing to make it look like there were more and so on, it still just felt like a small little throwaway scene because of its placement in this second episode. If that had been the week before, it would have been awesome.
I'm so tired of seeing John.
Well, but John could go talk to Mance before the Battle of the Wall, and then during the Battle of the Wall, Stannis sweeps in and saves him. And great, now we have something that, like, it built up to a moment instead of just like, hey, we had a battle episode, and then nothing was resolved. And next episode, as an aside, everything was solved. What? That's not narrative structure at all.
What else was weird? Killing off Jojen. I did not like that.
I mean, I was sort of fine with it. He's been so sick in the novels, and while I've been wondering what's up with that, because he only became sick and did so very suddenly once they crossed the wall, I kept thinking, oh, there's some, you know, magical connection here that's going to get explained. But he never really does anything at that point. They just drag him along. And
but that
so,
was awkward, because it's I guess he doesn't pull out of it.
Yeah, now
it's weird for me.
Did anyone need the Dungeons and Dragons scene? Was that there for any goddamn reason?
The what?
The fireballs?
Yeah, so a bunch of skeletons attack out of nowhere. They got initiative, so they got the surprise round. Mm-hmm. And then your wizard just throws magic missile at them, and the battle ends. It's pretty great for Dungeons and Dragons. Weird.
Yeah, it was a little odd. Plus, that Child of the Forest is weird. I could be misremembering from the books. I haven't gone back to look at the description, but in my head, I remembered them as being described much more creepily, like kind of Gollum-looking, you know.
They were basically elves. They were described as elves, but with brown skin.
Okay.
Weird. So, not terribly different, but I also love Blood Raven, like... Blood Raven might be my champ card if I got champ card.
Oh, I mean, that'd be amazing. Anything. And I love they had that line that he's been watching him with 1,000 eyes and one, but there was no.
He has 2 eyes.
Well, yeah, and he didn't have his birthmark either.
Yeah, I mean, I can see why, because he, like, even the book doesn't really make it clear who he is. That's just an identifier, like an Easter egg in the books.
Yeah, if you've read the prequels, which is part of why I think. You know, Martin is really hinting that that these are going to be more closely connected in the end than you think.
Yeah. I don't know.
We got
like
a new
Blood
one
Raven
today. Fun fact.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and Rogues, he has something about Daemon Blackfyre.
Oh, that landed. Nice.
I'll have to check it out.
Also, this probably dates our recording a little bit, but I definitely want to throw a prop out to the World Cup, which I am watching as much as I possibly can. Of course, I'm rooting for the U.S., and we did pretty well against Ghana. And by pretty well, I mean we got the W. We didn't play great, although Dempsey's goal was pretty good. And we were pretty flat afterwards, but all that matters is that win. Of course, my secondary team that I'm rooting for is Germany. And they did quite well against Portugal, so I'm actually feeling really good. I was worried about the group that we were in to begin with, being Germany, U.S., Porto, and Ghana. But I think things look likely right now for the two teams I'm rooting for to make it out of group play. But we'll see how the Portugal game goes on Saturday.
All right, boys, I have to crash. This was good.
Yeah, so once more, let's slop Daryl, and then we'll end this.
Sounds good.
Yeah, screw Daryl.
All right. Well, guys, thanks for listening to another fine episode of Two Champs and a Chump, and sticking with us despite the technical difficulties. Be sure and comment on CardGameDB or shoot us an email at twochampsonechump@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter, or I hear Google Plus is a thing. And one of these days, I swear, we're going to start using that Twitch account again. And by we, I mean one of the other people that enjoys playing on Octagon. Hint, Aaron should help with this. And
like,
you know,
I don't have to do anything technical.
We'll see what we can do. And we will catch you guys next week. Danger zone!
There's nothing to see here. Run away, no reason to be here. It's the ghost who never goes away. Turn around and leave us behind now. See the ground as it leads to the sky now.
Well, does a Tywin shit gold?
He does not, in the end, shit gold.
Best line in the books.
Yeah.
And Dwight, did he shit his pants? I mean,
well,
I assumed...
No, he didn't really have pants on.
Was he taking a shit?
Yeah, he was taking a shit.
Oh. That's when Tyrion kills him? That is fucked up.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, really. I hope you saw the episode, otherwise Daryl killed that.
Oh. No. I didn't see the episode.
Oh, well. Sorry.
Oh, wait. Are we actually... Oh, I guess we are recording. He read the quote. That... Damn it!
What?
By the way, that was Daryl Lloyd.
I am Daryl Lloyd.
What the fuck?
And apparently an asshole. Somebody's going to be like, damn it, Daryl! No, probably not. I'm sure everybody has read the books, except for me.
Yep. Daryl's staying strong. So far, so good. He may never, ever read them.
Well, yeah, at this rate, probably not.
You could always beep over that part.
You totally should. Just edit a long beep.
It would be hilarious.
That would be a pretty cool one. I may try and do that. That'd be good.